The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Live from our nation's capital, it's Deadline DC with Brad Bannon.
Welcome to Deadline DC. I'm Brad Bannon. I'm a Democratic strategist, a columnist for The Hill in Washington, D.C., and a political commentator for news radio stations KNX in Los Angeles and WGN in Chicago. My company, Bannon Communications Research, polls for progressive issue groups, labor unions, and Democrats. If you want to learn more about me or Bannon Communications Research,
Washington, D.C.,
you can find more information about me, or if you want to comment on the show, if you have any ideas or suggestions on the show, you can contact me at Twitter at Brad Bannon. Welcome to all of you watching me on Twitter or Periscope. Now everyone can watch the show by going to periscope.tv/Brad Bannon. You can also watch us now for the first time today on Facebook Live. Our guest in the first half hour is Colonel Cedric Layton, U.S. Air Force retired, who joins us to discuss national security policy. I always enjoy having Colonel Layton on the show because for the simple reason presidents spend most of their time on foreign policy, but it doesn't get much discussion during the campaign. So we're here to, in our own way, to remedy that today. In the second half hour, we're going to talk politics in the presidential race. Our guest on the provocative progressive political panel are Kimberly Scott, the publisher of Demlist, and progressive political activist Mark Grimaldi. Our guest, as I said, our guest in the first half hour is Colonel Cedric Layton, U.S. Air Force retired. He is the founder and president of Cedric Layton Associates, a strategic risk and leadership consultancy serving global companies and organizations. He founded the company in 2010 after serving in the U.S. Air Force for 26 years as an intelligence officer and attaining the rank of colonel. Colonel Layton can also be seen regularly on CNN, where he is a military analyst. The colonel's Twitter handle is at Cedric Layton, and his website is CedricLayton.com. Welcome, Colonel Layton. Welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. Okay,
Brad, it's good to be back with you.
I'm glad you could make it. We always have interesting discussions, I think. Joe Biden may or may not be the next president. He's leading in the polls right now, but we still have over 3 months left to the presidential election, and you never know in the crazy political climate we live in. But if Joe Biden does become president, what do you think his foreign policy priorities should be?
Well, I think one of the big things, Brad, that he'll have to do is he'll have to fix our alliances, repair our connections to all kinds of countries, particularly with NATO, with our Western European and Central European allies. He'll also have to stand up to Russia, and he'll have to stand up to China. And he'll have to be very clear in terms of everything from coronavirus response, coronavirus reactions, both what to do with people who are trying to steal our vaccine research, and also how to cooperate with other countries. So there is a lot of back and forth, really, that Joe Biden will have to do if he becomes the president of the United States. But the first thing I would say is repairing alliances, The second thing is changing the course of the country from a unilateralist approach to a multilateral, more globalist approach, in essence becoming a more traditional American president than what we've seen under Donald Trump. And that the reason for that change is to make sure that we maintain the security of the United States and do so with the help of our allies, and also to send a signal to our adversaries that not only are we back, but we are here to stay. And that's the kind of thing that Joe Biden will need to do in order to not only gain the upper hand when it comes to foreign policy issues, but also to bring back a much more traditional American approach to global affairs.
Why do you say that Joe Biden's going to have his plate full if he wins the presidential election? We have a pandemic. The economy is sagging. Climate change is lurking around the corner. Why do you say that Joe Biden's first priority in the national security area should be repairing our relationship with our allies?
Well, I think that, having experienced what life is like with allies and what life is like without allies, or at least with few allies, the best way to move forward in foreign relations is if you have good, strong allies by your side. If you can count on other countries to help you with things, or at least to support you, then the heavy lifting, both diplomatically and militarily, is made a lot easier. People as far back, really to the beginning of our republic, but more recently to World War II, knew that what they had to do was enlist the support of like-minded nations to defeat the Nazis. And that same kind of approach needs to be done with both President Xi of China and President Putin of Russia. Coddling either one of those is going to be a big mistake when it comes to not only foreign policy, but also the security of not only the United States, but all of its traditional partner nations as well.
Okay, I'd like you to comment on something. Last week, I think, Colonel Alexander Vindman retired from the Army. Now, Colonel Vindman, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, was one of the whistleblowers who threw a red flag up based on a conversation that President Trump had with Ukrainian officials about, essentially digging up dirt on Joe Biden. What do you have to say about this episode? Seems to me a pretty sad and tragic episode in American history.
Oh, I agree, Brad. It is definitely a tragic episode. And what it also shows is the degree of influence that the current administration is exercising over the minutest details of the military promotion system. Colonel Vindman was a student at the Army War College. He was in the process. He had done all of the things that he needed to do in order to achieve the next level. He was a Purple Heart recipient due to wounds that he received while serving in Iraq. And of course, he served on the National Security Council staff, which is the place where he heard that famous phone call, that infamous phone call that you're talking about with Ukraine's President Zelensky. Colonel Vindman heard on that call troubled him a great deal. And the fact that he went in front of Congress to basically say that not only was he concerned about the call, but that he felt it needed to be reported and that the president's conduct, the U.S. president's conduct, was questionable. That definitely put him in the crosshairs of the administration and politicized not only his specific promotion, but also the promotions of everyone who was going to be promoted at about the same time, or at least on what they call the same promotion list. So what Colonel Vindman did was, is at least in a microcosm, one of the more honorable things that I've seen lately, and that was in order to save other members of the military, especially other members of the Army, from having their promotions delayed, he decided to withdraw himself not only from competition for the promotion to colonel, but also from the Army as a career. Now, it's that part is, you know, while honorable, you know, for him as a person, it's a very sad commentary on how far the politicization of the military has gone in the Trump administration. And it's a very dangerous precedent to set for anybody who is even contemplating being a whistleblower in you know, a sensitive area like the National Security Council, the intelligence agencies, or any of the other myriad bureaus and departments that the Department of Defense has. So it's a very dangerous precedent, and it's something that we have to be very, very cognizant of. And I think, you know, from a congressional perspective, it's going to require a lot of continued oversight to make sure that the promotion process doesn't become even more unraveled during this period.
Okay. Our guest in this half hour is Colonel Cedric Layton, U.S. Air Force retired, who's here to discuss national security policy. We're going to break now for our audio listeners. For our Twitter and Facebook Live listeners, we'll continue the interview with the Colonel. Welcome back to our audio listeners. Yes, half hour is Colonel Cedric Layton, U.S. Air Force retired. He's the founder and president of Cedric Layton Associates, a strategic risk and leadership consultancy serving global companies and organizations. He founded the company after serving in the U.S. Air Force for 26 years as an intelligence officer. Okay, let's try something else. One of the things that concerns me a lot, although you don't let me start something else. There's been a lot of back and forth on this question of Russians putting a bounty on American soldiers killed by the Taliban. There's also a question of whether or not the president was alerted to that. And if he was alerted, why he hasn't done or said anything about it. Could you comment on that issue, please?
Sure, Brad. The idea of a bounty for the Taliban whenever they killed an American or allied soldier is, of course, reprehensible, and it violates all kinds of international rules, plus just standard practices of good military and diplomatic behavior. It is a very serious issue. And, you know, based on the reporting, it seems fairly convincing that the Russian intelligence service got in with elements of the Taliban and basically offered them bounties, oddly enough, in U.S. dollars to go ahead and kill as many Americans and allied soldiers as they could in Afghanistan. Reprehensible behavior. It is something that is really designed, you know, from a Russian standpoint to hasten the withdrawal of the American forces from Afghanistan. In essence, it's payback for some of the things that we did in Afghanistan in the 1980s to get the Russians out, or at that time the Soviets. So you can look at it, you know, as a way in which the great powers, you know, fight each other. But regardless, you know, whether or not they wanted to pay us back, quote unquote, it was still, you know, something that I believe is extremely serious and requires a very strong response from the White House and from the president himself. As far as we know, there has been no strong response from President Trump in this situation. He has not gone public with anything that he said to President Putin. As far as we know, he's not said anything to President Putin directly about this. This is the kind of thing that should be denounced at the highest levels and in the strongest terms that one can muster, you know, for this kind of thing, because, you know, what the Russians were trying to do is, you know, basically have the Taliban, you know, take care of the American problem as the Russians would see it. And then they would, you know, be not only getting us out of Afghanistan, but they'd also be weakening the government that we support in Kabul, the government of Ashraf Ghani, the Afghan president. So it is one of the worst things that another country can do to the United States, and it is something that requires us to really get in there and say, you don't do that to us, because if you do this, we will sanction you. We will do other things to make your life very difficult.
Yeah, it just seems to me this continues in a very troubling pattern by the president. Of course, first, there's the issue of Russian interference in the 2016 election to get Donald Trump elected in the first place. Then it seems to me in a number of foreign policy areas that the president has caved to Putin. I would say in Syria would be a good example. And it's a very troubling pattern. While we're in that part of the world, let me ask you another question about Afghanistan. A couple of weeks ago, there was a vote in the Senate about removing American troops from Afghanistan. It did not pass. But what is your opinion? A lot of Americans are troubled now. We've been involved in Afghanistan for 19 years, and the country seems to be still a god-awful mess. What's your opinion on our policy towards Afghanistan and American troops there?
Well, in a nutshell, our current policy has basically failed in Afghanistan, Brad. You know, it's very disturbing. You know, once you stay in a place too long, and I define too long if an entire military career can take place in that time frame. So, you know, 19 years, that's almost to the 20-year point when people are eligible to retire from the military. So, you know, using that somewhat artificial timeline, I would say that, you know, you have to have, when you go into a place like Afghanistan, and, you know, I would argue that our efforts after 9/11 to go into Afghanistan were justified, but you have to have a specific goal in mind. That goal can be something like overthrow the Taliban, which we did, and then, you know, get rid of Osama bin Laden, which eventually we did. But once you achieve those goals, then you have to say, okay, what are the kinds of things that I can do? How can I, in essence, take care of the security of the United States in a way that protects us, but also doesn't involve us in an endless conflict and in an endless series of deployments to a zone of conflict? And I think we should have, you know, at the very latest, you know, my personal view is that we should have left Afghanistan after bin Laden was killed. You know, that's, you know, somewhat harsh and, you know, would be something that puts the people in Kabul at a great deal of risk. But by the same token, they also have an obligation to stand up for certain things to protect their interests. And we can't always be seen to be the military force that goes in and stays everywhere. We have a lot of obligations around the world, and we also want to make sure that when we go to a place that we can achieve goals that are reachable and that we can actually use those goals to further our domestic and foreign policy interests. And in Afghanistan, we've basically gotten caught in a quagmire, and that's something that we should have avoided at all costs.
Let me ask you this question. What would happen in Afghanistan, and would it be a major threat to American national security if we pulled out all our troops?
Well, if we did it now and we did it precipitously, it would be a real problem. So that's one of the issues. You also have to have a plan to withdraw. But the risk is certainly there that the Taliban will take over and that it would become once again a basis for terrorist groups to use that country as a place to launch attacks from. That you have to keep away from. You know, you have to keep that issue away from Afghanistan, and you have to make sure that when we do something like that, that you can always go back in for a surgical strike. And we have that capability, and we should use that capability.
Okay. Our guest in this half hour is Colonel Cedric Layton, U.S. Air Force retired, who is an expert on national security policy. If you want to contact Colonel Layton, you can reach him on Twitter at Cedric Layton. That's CedricLeighton. Or his website, and his website is CedricLayton.com. Colonel Layton, thanks for joining us today on Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I always think we have very interesting discussions. So thank you for joining us again.
It was my pleasure, Brad. Thanks so much for having me. It's always great to be with you.
Okay. In the second half hour, we'll have our provocative progressive political panel, as always, to discuss latest developments in politics. Our guest, Kimberly Scott, the publisher of Demlist, and Mark Grimaldi. Okay. Welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. These are strange days indeed. The pandemic has ended many time-honored traditions, like taking the kids to visit their grandparents, going to the ball yard to see the local nine play, and sharing date night with your partner at the Cineplex. We live in the age of COVID-19, so it shouldn't come as a surprise that we're in the middle of a presidential race that reflects the strange nature of the times we live in. The traditional pattern of American politics is for presidential candidates to embrace the ideological extremes of their parties in the spring and then race to the center after their nominations. Texas political activist Jim Hightower once said, "There's nothing in the middle of the road but a yellow stripe and dead armadillos." This year, there's nothing but a black pole in the center of the political universe. But this year, we have a Republican president who has held fast to the most right-wing tenets of his party without interruption since we began the 2016 presidential race. We have a presumptive Democratic nominee who ran to the center to win his party's nod, but has moved left since he clinched the nomination in the spring. Go for it, Joe. Former President Bill Clinton laments the fact that he didn't have a major crisis to handle that would have proven him to be a great president. If he wins, Joe Biden won't have that problem, but he'll have lots of big problems to confront. He will inherit a nation plagued by pandemic and deep in recession. The ravages of climate change lurk just around the corner. The only way he can deal with these crises is with an aggressive, progressive FDR-style assault on the threats to our national survival. Anything less will not be enough. Okay, we're back. For our provocative progressive political panel. Joining us on the panel today are Kim Scott, the publisher of Demlist, and our own progressive political activist, Mark J. Grimaldi. Kim is the publisher of Demlist and editor of Dem Daily, a political column dedicated to educating and informing the public about the Democratic Party, policy, and politics. Sign up for the column is at www.demlist.com. The Twitter handle is TheDemList. Joining Kim on the panel is progressive political activist Mark Grimaldi. Mark has worked on Get Out the Vote operations for several Democratic presidential candidates, including Joe Biden. Mark is also involved in campaign finance reform and efforts for cancer research. His Twitter handle is Mark J. Grimaldi. Okay, panel, let's start with this. First, let's go to you, Mark. The polls show that Joe Biden has a big lead in the presidential race. the ABC News and the Washington Post released the results of a new national poll yesterday that showed Joe Biden has a 15% lead with all registered voters and a 10% lead with likely voters. The first thing I thought of when I saw the new poll was a flight I took from Atlanta back home after the end of the 1988 Democratic National Convention, when Democrats nominated Michael Dukakis to go up against George W. Bush. All the polls are showing that Mike Dukakis had double-digit leads. Me and my friends had a great time at the convention and flying back home, talking about the wonders of a Michael Dukakis presidency, and it all came crashing and burned as polls closed up and Michael Dukakis went down. So my question to you, Mark, is can Donald Trump recover from his summer slump to win a second term?
Yes, and I don't think anyone who's been in politics for any amount of time would tell you no. You obviously can see that this is a very unprecedented time. We haven't had a health crisis like this for 100 years since the Spanish flu. And I think that, you know, when you look at something like that, that's a unique situation enough. Then you add into that that we have racial unrest in this country that hasn't been seen, and the type of activism that hasn't been seen since probably, I would say, at least 50, 60 years. It's been a really just volatile time for Americans. And then you add in the factor that regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, unless you're a diehard, you know, Trump supporter, I don't think you can come to the conclusion that he's performed well when these crises hit. Regardless of who you want to give credit to on the economic, success of his first 2 years in office, I personally think he was riding the coattails of President Obama. And it was, something that was President Obama had to pull out of after George W. Bush's disastrous second term. But then you look at what has happened since President Trump has been tested, and he's failed by every single metric. And not only that, he's vying for the worst leadership in the world based on the COVID-19 numbers down there with the likes of Brazil, where their president actually has been infected and is also refusing to wear masks and things like that. So I think we are the worst in the world or very close to it. That said, I think maybe we have Kim here. Hi, Kim. Great to have you. Thanks for joining us. So I'll just fill you in. Brad had asked me about the poll numbers and basically whether or not Donald Trump can make some sort of a comeback. And my answer was absolutely yes. We're in an unprecedented time, and I think anything can happen. And anybody who's been in politics long enough and tells you otherwise, I think is just not being realistic. But I'd love to hear what you have to say.
It is a tough road. There's no question, fortunately, but it is still, I think, possible. I mean, whoever thought we would be in a worldwide pandemic 5 months ago? Well, the scientists did, but the president didn't acknowledge. So
the president possibly ignored them.
Right. So there is one thing that's floated out there too that might be a last minute boost for them, and that's the possibility of on the night that Joe Biden accepts the nomination anchored in Milwaukee, that President Trump will announce that he is switching Mike Pence as his running mate for Nikki Haley, former South Carolina governor. So, and particularly with this president, who knows what may happen. But it's great to see the stretch in the polls, but we've all seen crazier things happen. Not many, but crazier.
Okay. Kim, while we have you, do you want to say something? John Lewis sadly passed away over the weekend. What can you want to say about John Lewis and the impact he made on American society?
amazing man. Unfortunately, one that I was able to do some projects with over the years. A true gentleman and statesman. And we don't see as many of those as we used to. But from the time he started, he was part of SNCC when he was 18, 19 years old. Really was truly one of the pioneers of the civil rights movement, one of the big six organizers of the March on Washington, and then, of course, was with Dr. King and marched with him to Selma, Alabama, and across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where he was brutally beaten. And it's, we can only learn by his example. And I think it's very important that we try to encourage the next generation of John Lewis's. Certainly the party and every aspect of the party across the board is doing everything to encourage more involvement by minority leaders at a very young age. And his example, it doesn't matter that he was a teenager in 1960. It all still applies. It really is a great loss.
Okay, we're going to go to a break now, our audio break. We will continue for our viewers on Periscope.tv and for the first time today, Facebook Live. So stay tuned. We'll be back with our radio listeners in 4 minutes. We will continue with our video listeners. And if you're listening and you want to watch the show, go to periscope.tv/Brad Bannett at my own Periscope channel or Facebook Live. We'll be back after these messages. Okay, welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. Thanks to our viewers on PeriscopeTV.com and also Facebook Live for the first time today. For our audio listeners, if you want to watch the show as well as listen to it, you can join us at Periscope.tv /Brad Bannon. Or on Facebook Live. But let's get back to the our guest, Kimberly Scott, the publisher of Demlist, and progressive political activist Mark Grimaldi. Mark, Joe Biden announced that the former governor of Ohio, the former Republican governor of Ohio, John Kasich, who was also a Republican presidential candidate in 2016, is going to be the speaker at the virtual Democratic convention. This is opposed, of course, to the Republican COVID convention in Jacksonville. What do you make of John Kasich's appearance?
I think, you know, first of all, he's one of the people on stage in 2016 that I said, you know, to myself and many others, if, you know, a Republican were to be chosen and as president, this is probably the least problematic choice I would have, because he, you know, although he, you know, enabled policies that I disagree with, he seemed like he had, you know, the thoughts of someone who really cared about the country and wanted to do good for the country, which sounds like something you would think every candidate would have. But man, that's not something I could say about the 2016 Republican field, unfortunately, with the worst being Donald Trump. And I think that this just goes to show that common sense moderate Republicans are going to be gravitating toward Joe Biden, because they've seen the destruction that has happened under Donald Trump, and those who care about the country, much like the Lincoln Project and Republican Voters Against Trump, you're seeing people say country before party and actually putting their money where their mouth is and either, you know, distancing themselves from Donald Trump or denouncing him or coming all the way out and fully endorsing Joe Biden, but to then have him speak at the convention, I personally think is powerful. You need to expand, you know, your voting block as much as you can. I don't think it's going to alienate, you know, a large swath of Democratic voters. You know, maybe some would be offended by it, but I think overall, it's just going to show other Republicans who are on the fence that, you know, okay, this gentleman who I respect has done this. I could see myself doing this.
Kim, do you want to comment on Governor Kasich?
Yeah. Well, I agree very much on Mark's articulate expression of people feeling country before party. John Kasich, I'm not sure if all the people in Ohio would necessarily agree that. He is a very ambitious man still. But nevertheless, it's what he represents. He's considered more moderate by most. It's smart to have Republican up in the same way that in the past, presidents of the other party have picked some people for, like in Obama's case, Republican John Huntsman to be an ambassador. So you have to be able to show that you're crossing party lines. Biden, at least originally, was touted to be more moderate. And as Mark said, things like the Lincoln Project, which is a series of ads that are being produced by high profile Republicans.
The Lincoln Project. Okay, let's try something else. Every time I scroll Facebook, I get angry at something. This weekend, one thing that really set me off, which I think is a very dangerous thing, is the president has sent armed forces into the city of Portland to help put down the civil disturbances there. Apparently, these masked, unmarked police are a combination of border guards and prison guards from federal prisons. And they're essentially taking protesters off the streets, putting them into unmarked cars and take them away. Now, in the Trump tradition of let's make things worse than it possibly could be, the attorney general today announced that they were going to do the same thing in Chicago. And the other thing along those lines which disturbed me is yesterday Chris Wallace on Fox asked the president whether or not he would accept the results of the presidential election if he lost. And he said he might or he might not. I think, you know, this Portland and now Chicago thing is incredibly dangerous. The idea of a federal police force going into a city without the consent of local and state officials and pulling people off the streets. You know, I've resisted using the term fascist as long as I could, because that to me is a pretty extreme term. But this is getting out of hand. Kim?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And let's call it for what it is. You know, I mean, Trump is still trying to appeal or at least hold on to his base, which is dwindling at last, despite all his efforts, or because of his efforts. It's enormously dangerous. You know, here we have, you know, again, we lost John Lewis this weekend. And in the same weekend, we're looking at a repeat of the same kind of video from the mid-60s civil rights movement. And this also, like anything else, it puts it into a tailspin. It creates a diversion from other things that are going on. And it will certainly create more lawsuits and more protests.
Mark?
Yeah.
Do you have any feelings about this?
Yes, and the fact that, you know, you saw...
Just kidding, I knew you probably did.
You saw things happen, you know, like the people who were captured were, and that's what I say, captured, kidnapped. They were grabbed off the streets, not even, this is in Portland over the weekend, and last week, They were grabbed off the streets by officers, federal officers in military outfits without identification in unmarked cars. And when they got brought in, they were not Mirandized at first. The gentleman who talked to Portland Public Broadcasting said his beanie was pulled over his face while they were driving to this federal prison area that they have set up. And then he was put in a cell with other people who were not wearing masks. And, you know, then he was Mirandized. Does that sound like America to you? And now Trump is saying that's a success and he wants to send this to more American cities. And, you know, obviously there are many liberal cities, like you have Chicago. I think Nashville was mentioned. This is extremely dangerous. And I think, you know, you have in Detroit, too. It was also mentioned, as well as Atlanta. You're going to have more escalations. These people are not trained to deal with these type of protests. Go read the Washington Post today, because there's a Navy veteran. His video went viral. All he did was approach the officers in Portland and ask them, please remember your oath. And his hand was broken in two places, and he had chemical irritants sprayed in his face. And he had his Navy shirt on and everything. The video has 11 million views. So that's what President Trump is calling a success, that he wants to go send to more American cities. So I couldn't be more scared of this and angry myself.
Yeah, welcome to brown shirts and fascist Italy in the 1930s. Okay, let's try one more thing. We don't have much time left, so I'll ask for a quick answer from each of you. Is Kamala Harris, the senator from California, going to be Joe Biden's running mate? He said he'd make his decision in a couple of weeks. He said he may not announce it to the convention. What do you think, Kim? Is Kamala Harris going to be Joe Biden's running mate?
I think it's Harris or Elizabeth Warren. Despite the call for a woman, a minority woman, Elizabeth Warren is still very high among Democrats and minority Democrats as a choice. And Biden wants someone who he has that energy with. But that being said, if I had to call it, today, I'd call it as Kamala Harris.
Mark?
I think Kim has perfectly stated what I was thinking. I think, maybe there's an outside chance if Val Demings is like a dark horse, because she checks a lot of boxes along the resume that you'd be hoping for. But I have to defer to Kim here with her expertise, and I think she hit the nail on the head.
Okay, I think that's it for us. That's all for Deadline DC with Brad Bannon today. Thanks to our guest, Colonel Cedric Layton, U.S. Air Force retired, Kimberly Scott, the publisher of Dimlist, and progressive political activist Mark Grimaldi. I'm here every Monday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. If the Lord is willing, the creek don't rise, and Donald Trump doesn't declare martial law. This is Brad Bannon. Stay strong, stay safe, and don't drink the Clorox or the Kool-Aid. I don't care what the president says.